Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod, where we talk to all the interesting people of the San Luis Valley. With us today in our studio on the south side of Alamosa is Greg Heigl, chair of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District Board, a multi-generational rancher, farmer on the Heigl Ranch. Greg, how you doing?
Good, Chris.
Good to see you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Greg, just for transparency purposes, Greg is an old, one of my best friends from childhood, growing up in Alamosa. But we're going to talk water. We're going to talk about your farming season, your hay season. But before we do any of that, let's talk about the Broncos.
They won.
The Broncos won a game.
Look good. Look better, anyway.
I tried to talk you into going to that game in London. I told you you should have went to that game, had a good time. Broncos were going to win. You didn't believe me. The Broncos won.
It had been a drag to be over there, and they've been playing like they were.
Greg is a long time. How long do you hold season tickets? 50 years? 45?
Yeah, probably 45.
And you have six tickets?
Five.
Five season tickets, the Heigl family. You've been suffering this last year, though.
Yeah, we have. We bought those ones, remember, with Al? What was it?
Was
that your relative?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Uncle Tony.
Uncle Tony, yeah. I think that's how Mom got started, I think, on that.
That's right. That's right. And Uncle Tony is just turned 93.
Really?
And still a Broncos fan. The Broncos haven't killed him yet. Sorry, Uncle Tony. Let's move on. No, on a serious note, end of the water season for you. And I think you got, two, three cuts of hay this year? How was your season?
Difficult to say the least. It was a strange year for hay.
How come? We had good July, August rains?
The timing of the rain.
So explain that to us.
Well, first you started off at the beginning in June. You know, it was dry. The wind blew. So the water that we applied was not doing, you know, the crop didn't grow. It just kind of stood there. And then 4th of July, it started raining, which is when we should be cutting. So we nipped it then and cut and laid on the ground for 10, 12 days because of rain. Third was the same way. Our meadow hay was... Well, to put it in perspective, out of 5,600 bales, we got 150 in the barn.
Gotcha.
That's good, clean hay.
So, and what type of year is that for you traditionally when you...
Well, usually we put 1,800 bales in the shed to sell. So you can tell how the... You just kind of sort it, to quality. And... This year, I didn't think the quality was that good, so I put it outside. But on the flip side, I've sold my hay this year for more than I ever have.
Good prices. But your input costs were higher.
Yes, real high. Fuel was high. Parts were high. Labor. Labor was hard. That's another...
You can't find labor for your operations, not just you. It's... A lot of farming and ranching operations across the valley have a difficult time finding labor.
Hours. I think, most people wanted to work an 8 to 4. You farming sun up to sundown.
And how has that changed for you through the decades? Because you've been at this, 60 years. Not quite that long, but pretty close. How has that piece of it, the labor piece, changed for you, in particular the last 10, 20 years?
Well, it's just changed in the last three since COVID.
Gotcha. So before COVID, you were pretty steady before COVID.
Yeah, there was always a college kid or a high school kid that wanted some kind of a job, part-time, full-time. You never worried about a labor force. And usually good workers, as a rule. But people you get now, that's...
What do you think? Why do you think COVID changed that?
I have no idea. Why people don't want to work. I guess it's easier to get free handouts.
You think that's what it is?
I hope not, but I got a feeling that's what it is.
Huh. Interesting.
I honestly don't know, Chris, why people... It's noticeable out there. We'd have 8, 10 kids want a job, and I haven't had one one kid come in three.
What's the solution to that in your mind as you, because this is a situation you have to solve to have.
You know, like my son, the one that I think will come back and wants to do it. He likes to fish and stuff like that. You can't fish like he likes to fish being a farmer. Your days off are few and far between.
So it's trying to get a next generation to understand the commitment required to be a rancher, to be a farmer, that lifestyle. And maybe it's the lifestyle then that is fading away from us because you aren't finding that next generation that wants the lifestyle. I don't know.
Well, farming's changed a lot in my lifetime, I think. It used to be you were family farms. You know, your family farmed or lived there, or that kind of thing. Now they're corporate farms. You know, they're agribusiness, which is fine. Don't get me wrong. We have to eat. But I think just that dynamic has changed.
Even here in the valley is you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people claim they're family farms, but, you know, they're big, big business farms there.
The largest is a big farm in Subdistrict 1 of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. Huge alfalfa grower for operation in California, yeah?
Just very true. They came out here and bought the land. It was cheaper to raise it. Was it 750 miles away?
What's the name?
North Star Farms.
Right. North Star Farms is the largest alfalfa grower in the valley, based in Subdistrict 1 of the Conservation District in the west end of the valley, right?
I think
in Sawatch County.
North Star's in 5, actually.
Gotcha. Subdistrict 5. That's right. Yeah, you're right.
And
sorry.
It's a big consumer of water, and that's, you know, it's a little subdistrict, a lot smaller than Subdistrict 1.
Right.
But still, it's the same, and it's on the edge of Sub 1, so.
Right. So I want to, because we're going to come back to that, but let's keep going on about some of the work that you're doing with the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. Our friend Cleve Simpson, the state senator, the general manager of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District, pushed through a Senate bill last year that is going to result in at least $30 million coming into the valley through the Rio Grande Water Conservation District, your board. You also have to work with state agencies to be able to tap into that money, right?
Yes, there is a process to get it out.
So update is on where the board is and the district in establishing those ground rules or how operations are going, because you've been having those discussions. I know you're not there yet, but you are working through that, right? Of how are operators in the valley going to be able to apply or try to access that $30
million? Well,
I know there's a lot there.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not sure we've got to a set of sidebars to do this yet.
Right.
Because there's a lot of dynamic to it. A lot of $30 million really doesn't go that far in the water world. So it'll go fast. I would, we had to sit last Tuesday with Subdistrict 4 on their plan. They're already way ahead, taking some quarters out in their subdistrict, which is a good thing. Through the valley, to me, it's pretty much if you own a well, or if you don't own a well should be tapped, shut off, and that never pumps again.
Right.
That should be the way that this $30 million is spent. If you look at it from the outside, Subdistrict 1 could take it all. You know, how if you've attended our meetings,
right,
and know what's going on out there. You know, 30 wells, that might get you 60 wells.
So it's trying to get a next generation to understand the commitment required to be a rancher, to be a farmer, that lifestyle. And maybe it's the lifestyle then that is fading away from us because you aren't finding that next generation that wants the lifestyle. I don't know.
Well, farming's changed a lot in my lifetime, I think. It used to be you were family farms. You know, your family farmed or lived there, or that kind of thing. Now they're corporate farms. You know, they're agribusiness, which is fine. Don't get me wrong. We have to eat, but I think just that dynamic has changed. And
even here in the valley is you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people claim they're family farms, but, you know, they're big, big business farms there.
The largest is a big farm in Subdistrict 1 of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. Huge alfalfa grower for operation in California, yeah?
Just very true. They came out here and bought the land. It was cheaper to raise it. Was it 750 miles away?
What's the name?
North Star Farms.
Right. North Star Farms is the largest alfalfa grower in the valley, based in Subdistrict 1 of the Conservation District in the west end of the valley, right?
I think...
In Sawatch County.
North Star's in 5, actually.
Gotcha. Subdistrict 5. That's right. Yeah, you're right.
And
sorry.
It's a big consumer of water, and that's, you know, it's a little subdistrict, a lot smaller than Subdistrict 1.
Right.
But still, it's the same, and it's on the edge of Sub 1, so.
Right. So I want to, because we're going to come back to that, but let's keep going on about some of the work that you're doing with the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. Our friend Cleve Simpson, the state senator, the general manager of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District, pushed through a Senate bill last year that is going to result in at least $30 million coming into the valley through the Rio Grande Water Conservation District, your board. You also have to work with state agencies to be able to tap into that money, right?
Yes, there is a process to get it out.
So update is on where the board is and the district in establishing those ground rules or how operations are going, because you've been having those discussions. I know you're not there yet, but you are working through that, right? Of how are operators in the valley going to be able to apply or try to access that $30
million? Well,
I know there's a lot there.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not sure we've got to a set of sidebars to do this yet.
Right.
Because there's a lot of dynamic to it. A lot of $30 million really doesn't go that far in the water world. So it'll go fast. I would, we had to sit last Tuesday with Subdistrict 4 on their plan. They're already way ahead, taking some quarters out in their subdistrict, which is a good thing. Through the valley, to me, it's pretty much if you own a well, or if you don't own a well should be tapped, shut off, and that never pumps again.
Right.
That should be the way that this $30 million is spent. If you look at it from the outside, Subdistrict 1 could take it all. You know, how if you've attended our meetings,
right,
and know what's going on out there. You know, 30 wells, that might get you 60 wells, maybe. And that's a dent in it, but then that leaves out the other 5 subdistricts. So it's going to be a process here, I think, of how we figure out who is capable of using this money.
So the goal of the $30 million, and again, it could be $30 million, it could be more, you're sharing this money, there's $60 million total. Republican River Basin and the Upper Rio Grande Basin are splitting that $60 million, theoretically $30 million apiece, but we'll see how it all gets spent and used to see if that is a 30-30 million split, right? But the goal here in the Rio Grande is to retire groundwater pumping wells.
Permanently.
Permanently.
Yeah, that's our goal. That's my goal for the $30 million, and it's money that we've tapped, you know, Cleve got the money. We should use it to help our problem here. But like I said earlier, it's $30 million goes, it seems like a lot, but it really won't go that far. So I think we ought to be real diligent in how we spend it and make sure we get good bang for our buck.
Yeah, those are some interesting conversations. One of the things I've really appreciated since I've been back is how open the water community is in terms of its dealings and its business. Because your board, you can go to a meeting at the Rio Grande Water Conservation District board meetings or any of the sub-district board meetings as just a general public like me, and you learn a lot. I mean, you guys are really open in terms of, I think, that whole water community, management of water, all the strategies you're trying to do to retire irrigated acreage in the valley, retire all of that is in a very, I think, a very open, transparent process. And I've been impressed by that. I've been impressed going and just plugging in because I know zero, nada, since I came back. But I've just been going to your meetings, and man, there's a lot of information that you can gain just going to your meetings. I really appreciate that.
That's the way I learned how to do it, Chris. When I was first was put on the board, the room would be packed with people, and it's always open. There's a lot of comments out there of the feds being involved in the meeting, like you said, being in there. A lot of places you go, and you don't have that type of people in your meeting. I don't know any different than that. It's always been open, and people come. They know, like you said, you can get information and not feel excluded. That's one thing I like to keep is water. There's always ideas in water to figure out some of these problems. Might come from a guy in the office or a farmer out in the field. You put them both together and never know what you can figure out that way.
And you just recently got voted again to be the chair of the board of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District, and that's a position you've held for how long now?
Chair of the board? I think 9 years.
And you've been on the board how long?
This year's my 23rd, I believe.
So why is it that you, because you and I have had this conversation, and you've told me more than once in the past 5 years or so that you're getting a little tired, that you have to fight these battles when it comes to water, keeping the water in the Upper Rio Grande Basin. You know a lot more about that over 20 plus years than most people, and you stay there, which we're grateful that you are, because I think people are really would be really nervous if you moved away, if Cleve Simpson moved away at this point in time, because the issues are so critical to farming here, to in the environmental stewardship of the valley, to water as a whole. So why do you stay engaged in this topic, and where do you think we are at this point in time in history based on your years of service on that board?
Well, I started from a surface water point of view. You know, that's all I have. I don't have water, a well to go out and pump to finish my crop. I have to depend on whatever Mother Nature gives me. And when this all started in 2002, it was kind of hard for us to be out of water and sprinklers that had a priority that was pretty junior to our water right could still raise a crop. And that's kind of how I got started. I had two neighbors that I was ready to be ornery, and they said, well, use your anger and figure out a way to do this. They were very upstanding water people back then, and I respected them. So that was kind of how I got started doing that. There's always controversy in water in the West. It's dry in the West, so it'll never go away. Through the cycles, when you have a lot of water, you have people arguing with each other, well, I should be getting my water now when there's a lot. I use water every day. That's why I stayed it. If without it, I don't do what I do. That's why I became a ditch rider. I live at the halfway point at the ditch, so I make sure the water gets to my head gate. Doing that and made sure everybody on the ditch got water. That was one reason why I started doing that. And
how difficult are things today based on when you first started? How much more difficult or how much more dire is the circumstances when you think about water today than other periods you've lived through or worked through?
Oh, these dry years are occurring a lot more than they used to, which is very difficult for what I do. I live on the river, depend on groundwater, keeping the area up, you know, for crops. That's the way the area is. The river's dry, the alluvium and that kind of thing. So that is what's really changed. Actually, 1997 is probably when the biggest change occurred. That's, we got cut that year, and that was, I think since 97, our ditch has been lost water through the appropriation system probably 10 times. which probably takes on the whole 100 years before that, other than the 50s.
There's probably no one or few people that have had a front row seat to watching the environmental aspects of the valley, the environmental landscape of the valley, the water, the Rio Grande, the creeks that flow into the Rio Grande, the tributaries. You've probably have one of the best front row seats to seeing that change over a period of decades. Would you agree with that? And what have you seen that scares you?
Yeah, I've observed a lot. Because
you're right there.
Yeah, I live right on the river. Every day I look at it. It's part of my cows have to drink, so I have to find water. You know, that's just something. That is kind of a one thing you were talking about, change. When I was in high school, we never worried about watering the cows because there was always water somewhere to be found.
From surface water.
From surface water. And now I've drilled wells. It's work now. Not work. It's just something you pay more attention to.
What do you think the future holds?
Honestly, if we can survive this weather change, whatever you want to call it, climate change, we'll be all right. But I always look or think about the Indians that lived in the Four Corners in 700 years ago. You know, something drove out a whole culture back then because of water. And I just, not fear, but just think that maybe we might be going through that type of a weather pattern when it dried it out. And I believe in the ebbs and flows of moisture in the air and that kind of thing. So,
right. That's an interesting perspective. Hey, we're going to be right back. We're talking to Greg Heigl. This is the Valley Pod. We're going to take a quick break.
The Valley Calendar is the most comprehensive listing of events happening every day and weekend across the San Luis Valley. All the events of the Valley in one place. You can add your event to the Valley Calendar. Just go to alamosacitizen.com and click on the Valley Calendar link. You'll see all the events happening and you'll see how to submit your event to the calendar. Or send an email to info@alamosacitizen.com with the information. It's the Valley Calendar on alamosacitizen.com. All the Valley events in one place.
Hey, we're back. We're talking to Greg Heigl. This is the Valley Pod, and we're talking about the challenges Valley farmers, Upper Rio Grande Basin, are having with water, climate change, changes to weather, whatever you want to call it. You know, I was reading an interesting article this morning, and I want to ask you about this, because I worry about state-to-state cooperation. And you have a worry about federal government coming in the Upper Rio Grande Basin and getting involved there too, I think. But I was reading this article out of Texas, Texas Tribune, and they're talking about the population growth in Texas, the challenges they're having with finding enough water to meet their population growth, particularly even along the Rio Grande as it flows into Texas, into El Paso and goes west. And one of the things that came out that hit me was Texas talking about, this is our water. And if we don't build the reservoirs, if we don't cap, it's going to move on. And that's what concerns me when I think of the Colorado River Basin, the Upper Rio Grande River Basin, is the state-to-state cooperation that has to occur if everyone is going to be able to have a future here. Because if you have states that start fighting differently and just want to hold their, and we're seeing that, even Colorado, Nebraska. That's what I worry about. Where are you on state, what do you see? Because you're at these board meetings. Do you have any of that concern of state-to-state cooperation as we're figuring out water flow, who belongs, what water goes where, how much water you get, who owns what water? That's what I worry about.
Well, one thing that I've thought about during all this, in this drought, is used to be there would be water that, I don't know if you want to call it unaccounted for, but it was just there, wetlands, return flows to the river. And with this drought, that water's went away, or with population growth, people have come out and filed on that water, or there might have been a decree on that water that nobody ever used before. It was just a decree. Now all of a sudden it's worth a little bit of money, so people are going out and trying it to see if they can get it mm-hmm. to use, mm-hmm. like you said. And that just takes, just keeps taking out of the bowl. You know, eventually the bowl runs dry. Climate change is the biggest thing. You hear people talk about it, but you don't hear people talk about it. We can fight and litigate and engineer, but if there's no water, we're not making any water. So that's probably what stirs your state-to-state conflicts. You know, people are actually, there's not any extra water anymore. We better fight for what we got.
Well, what I worry about, too, is the political period of time that we're living in, where we don't see a lot of cooperation state-to-state, governor-to-governor. Instead, we're seeing states pitting against each other, fighting with each other politically, trying to show that they have the right way, that they do it. That's what I worry about, is how the political climate, state capital to state capital, is just not good right now. And so how can you deal with a complex issue like water if you are having these political battles state to state? And we're seeing that.
Yeah, and that's just part of water. If you want to know the truth, it's especially like the state of Colorado. Water law, Colorado water law. It is law in Colorado. New Mexico, not so much. Texas, you own everything that goes underneath you. You just assume it's yours. I don't know if the states, I see trouble, like you said, on the Colorado, because you have such population on that, and they depend on the Colorado for the population. The Rio Grande, I think the state of Colorado is lucky on the Rio Grande, because we don't have a major metropolis close to us, or you would have. You got RWR trying to put it over a mountain to take
right.
water.
Right.
If we had somebody downstream, it would be even a bigger problem, especially if they were in Colorado's side of the line. They'd be up trying to take water from the farmers. And that's something people don't think about, I don't think, because they build their townhouses and have those developments. But water's not a main issue when they build that development. It's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and like you said, state to state, it's everybody looks upstream to find water, and that's what's happening, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're going to see that with Texas looking upstream up the upper Rio Grande a little bit more. I think that's what you're going to see a little bit more of.
Yeah, and in my opinion, New Mexico's a little behind the curve. That's what they're going through. We figured this out 20 years ago when we started sub-districts and understanding more about groundwater. We knew we were pumping too much out, so we're hurting ourselves. Texas is the same way. They have a different dynamic at that end of the river, but there was wells close to the river that were pumping where the water should have went to Texas probably, and they're figuring it out, though. I think even last week the news came out that they've had it. They are reached an agreement, the three states.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe.
We'll see that.
Yeah, it's still.
The other thing that your board has been hearing about, and you guys haven't taken a position, I don't believe, but you've been hearing about it, and that's proposed federal legislation called the Rio Grande Water Security Act. And that would get the Bureau of Reclamation, that would get other federal agencies studying the upper Rio Grande, or studying the Rio Grande Basin itself, and working through how to restore it and what are your thoughts about just that idea of the Rio Grande Water Security Act at the federal level?
As long as they stay out of Colorado, I'm all right with it. You know, there's a Rio Grande Compact, and Colorado is very good at meeting the compact. So as far as I'm concerned, they come up past the state line. Colorado's done its part, and it has since 36 or whenever the compact was signed. But it'll make a lawsuit. It'll give jobs to lawyers and engineers. It's just kind of the way water works.
One of the things I've enjoyed and appreciated going to your meetings that I hear about, and that's the longtime water attorney David Robbins, who I find to be quite the character at your meetings, but he really has some context and perspective when you hear him talk. And that seems to be one of the benefits to your board, is you have people like him advising you, giving you historical context and perspective, to what is a very complex topic, water.
Well, that's one thing I've learned, is you can learn something about water every day. And that you kind of spoke to that subject. That district board is very good at bringing in people to educate us. Or the valley as a whole has been very active over what I know of history of it, of being ahead of the game, figuring ideas out, like the sand dunes, you know, the water right over there. That was a big deal. That's a very smart deal. A lot of ditch companies have bylaws. You get farther south, ditch companies don't have bylaws. They have foreign companies so they can protect their water, that kind of thing.
So you're saying that the valley has a very sophisticated and progressive water community, particularly when you compare it downstream to New Mexico. Sounds like Texas has its act together. California, I lived in California. I'm always impressed with that state. But I want to ask you about Douglas County, because I think that's where people underestimate the valley. Because you have renewable water resources in Douglas County. County commissioners there trying to get involved with renewable water resources. But I think where people underestimate is how organized the valley is and how much the valley knows when it comes to its water and how to protect it. Where do you think that whole thing's going with Douglas County and renewable water resources?
I'm banking on the last 30 years of being proactive. Like I mentioned, the Sand Dunes Decree. The valley has been very smart in protecting the water. It's going to be actually pretty hard, I think, to get water up and over the mountain to them with laws and parks and whatever we've done, you know, through history to protect this. This is not the first time this has happened to the valley. You know, there's probably the sixth or seventh time somebody's tried to come in, and we've learned, whoever was on the boards or the lawyers back then have learned and responded to what they've learned to that and tried to set it up so we don't have to worry. But, you know, water, the more people and the more money, it's hard to fight. And, you know, $1 on your water bill in Douglas County generates a lot more money than $1 on Alamosa's water bill to fight. And that's...
Well, and that's where you also have to step in, because the Rio Grande Water Conservation District Board, your board, the one that you chair, you have to then figure out how to fight that legally through attorneys and paying for attorneys and finding money to battle that in court, right, in water court. And you guys have to come up with the money to do that.
Yeah. you speak of water, renewable waters. The one thing that's new to me on this is the media, this social media platform that took off. And I think it made a big effect. You know, the people in Douglas County that don't really pay attention to their water, as long as their tap turns on, their yard gets watered, they're good. But then they're on social media and reading this, and they're thinking, wow, that's where my water comes from. You know, and I think it helped tremendously, because I think the commissioners up there are getting a lot of pressure.
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, Alamosa Citizen, you know, has done pretty good work in there, and we have asked for open records, and we've seen a lot of emails, and are still actually looking at emails that we got through an open records request. And I can tell you there is strong, strong disapproval of the commissioners to pursue this in Douglas County. Everything, every communication we've seen is indicating that. There's a tiny bit of support. And as you know, there's a tiny bit of support down here in the valley. A tiny bit. Let me ask you this, and then we're going to let you go. How do you deal with neighbors when you find someone that has a differing point of view than you when it comes to water, irrigation, just land in general? How do you deal with conflict, you personally? Because you've had to deal with it a lot. I mean, you have to do it with those relationships. And I think that's something you've learned through the years.
Yes, it is. Usually I'd be up and fighting, going after it. But I've learned to bite my tongue and listen to the idea. Like I said earlier, water, you can learn something in water every day. Maybe you might not agree, but you can take stuff out of that idea to help you do what you want to do, how to protect your water, that kind of thing.
Well, there might be something there, I think, for all of us to learn as we watch you at that board level deal with your fellow board members and others that have something to say about how water is used in the valley, because you do handle yourself very well at that board level and your relationships across the valley when it comes to water users, farmers, irrigators. You've earned a lot of respect in that water community and how you've gone about and conducted your business. I think you've done a really good job there.
Thanks, Chris. You know, if you water, like I said, water's in Colorado, the law. And if you can't figure it out yourself, you go to court, you hire attorneys, you hire engineers, and it starts costing you money. And you, at the end, you don't have anything extra when it gets to that point. So I figured, like I said, the two gentlemen I referred to earlier taught me how to figure that out. Instead of going that route, try to figure out a common ground where everybody can make it. That's where these sub-districts came from, was instead of just getting shut off, we'll try to solve our own problem before somebody comes and tells us what to do.
Well, we wish you all the best in all the work that you're doing at the Rio Grande Water Conservation District, all the work you're doing out there at the Heigl Ranch. You've been listening to the Valley Pod. We've been talking to my good friend Greg Heigl. The Valley Pod is part of the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. We'll see you around the valley.
Cool.
That's different.
Huh?
That's different.
Did you get that off?